to Glimmer of Genius, episode 25. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering, bringing you all the latest tournament reports, news, deck ideas, and more. Unfortunately, this week there was a major issue with the recording, and I'm unable to edit it properly. So rather than bring you nothing, what we are bringing you this week is an unedited, raw version of episode 25. Grant and I go over GP Birmingham, and we talk about how to build a cube. This episode is a bit longer than what we would normally like the show to be and contains a lot more what I would call raw footage. So I apologise greatly for this, but unfortunately due to the technical issues that I have been facing, I've been unable to get around that. And as I mentioned, rather than have no episode, I thought it best to have at least something this week. So apologies once again, this is far below the normal quality that we would normally like to put out for you. However, there was very little I could do this week. I can't stress enough that the quality of this episode is not the benchmark for our usual standards, so please do stick with it. And next week, with any luck, we will be back on regular form.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah, you good?
Yeah, I can't complain. It's a nice day. Only been vomited on once today, that's good.
I assume by your offspring.
Yes.
Okay, that's good. That's a good clarification.
Yeah. That's good. She caught me by surprise, though, to be fair. I got her all dressed up. Laura's taken her out to see her stepmom. And literally, I turned my head to the side just to sort out something with the car seat. And I'm like, why is my hand warm? Like, thanks. All over the outfit. I ain't changing you again. Did you go to GP Birmingham?
No, I went to Portugal to see Eurovision instead.
You actually went to Portugal?
Yeah, I got back from Lisbon literally this morning.
Jesus, I was a bit slow there. I knew you'd watched it. I didn't realise you'd actually gone all the way to bloody see it.
Yeah, a friend of mine was like, oh, I've got tickets to Eurovision. Do you want to come with me? This is like 4 months ago or something. I was like, yeah, why not? I don't go on holiday very much. So yeah, just went. Used it as an excuse to go to Lisbon and also apparently go to the Eurovision.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been fun.
How long were you over there for?
I went there Thursday and got back. What was supposed to be late last night, but ended up, I didn't get home until about 1:45, which, given my alarm goes for 6, hence why I'm kind of tired.
Yeah. No, fair enough. So did you get to see much of Lisbon around when you were there, I take it?
Yeah, I've been to Lisbon once before, and we went to kind of like a different part of it, and that was fun. I don't think I've ever been offered cocaine more times than in my life than when I was walking around Lisbon this weekend.
Really?
Literally, I think if you walked around in the evening, it was probably like every 20th person offered you cocaine.
Wow.
obviously all fake, but still.
Oh, right.
Yes, that was a fun experience.
So are they targeting you because you're a tourist and they think they can just get to sell you pretend drugs?
Yes.
And then you just, that's it.
Yes, but also drugs are decriminalised over there. So you can't legally sell it. But if you're caught with a personal supply of drugs on, there's no penalty whatsoever, or there's like a small fine or something.
Okay.
So it's not risky, like selling drugs over there as it is to, say, compared to here.
Yeah. Okay.
Fun fact.
No, I had no idea that was a thing over there. I would not have been expecting that, wandering around and then that happening at all. We've all been there, you know, wandering to a pub toilet. Someone asks if you got any weed. You know, that happens occasionally. But okay. Normally, it's when you go to places. People selling you little keychains or souvenirs of like of stuff. Not, do you want any cocaine? That's great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If I ever find myself in Lisbon with Laura, I'm not going to tell her the bit about it being decriminalised and it happens a lot.
Yeah,
I'll just be like,
pretty good idea.
Yeah, I'll just be like, oh my god, man, it's offering us. We should buy some. Just be polite. And then make her worried about having them on her the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, then, Grant. So what I'm thinking of for today is just browse a little bit over the GP that happened. But also, if you're okay with doing so, is maybe chat a little bit about cube building. Because I know you've talked about cube before, but I'm thinking maybe more from an actual, like, if anyone wants to build their own cube, that sort of thing.
That's cool.
And then just kind of keep it with that, because I reckon between those two things, we'll probably have a good chunk of stuff there. If you're happy with that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Awesome. Okay, then. So I'll probably do an intro a bit later on. I myself haven't done much in the way of magic this week because I've been preparing for a different tournament for Warhammer, a big Warhammer tournament.
Oh, that'd be insane,
Yeah, so that's happening. The guy who's doing it, incidentally, it's a bit off topic, but he's posted up this little vlog of him building the terrain.
Yeah.
And he's wanted to basically provide a certain level of terrain. And he's only started building it 7 days ago. Yeah, it's the biggest Warhammer event in the country, and he's just putting up these vlogs of his back garden just full of foam, and he's like, "Yep, I'm fed up cutting up bits of foam now, and now I'm fed up cutting up gluing the bits of foam," and I'm just like, "You're mental."
It was like when I was probably into Warhammer when I was younger, although obviously I'm trying to get back into it now. When I went to the game day things in. Birmingham, I think. And it was when Lord of the Rings Warhammer had just come out. And at one of the, obviously at this convention, they had a segment, I think is probably the best way to describe it, of Minas Tirith. So they had a Warhammer scale, eighth of Minas Tirith. So it was still a good 20 or 30 foot tall. But all the models in it obviously were scaled to the streets and the archways and stuff of Minas Tirith. It was so cool.
Stuff like that when you see it all kind of together, and especially when they put models on it as well, not just the scenery, all kind of coming together of it.
That was the biggest piece of scenery I've seen until I went to Warhammer World. And there's a diorama there that's absolutely just ridiculous. I don't know if you've been to Warhammer World before.
I have. Which one? Because they've got quite a few.
The double floor one, where it's got Ultramarines versus Chaos Space Marines and also Chaos.
Yeah.
I was just, it's more the models, the actual terrain is good, but it's all the models, it's all the flyers, it's all the demons crawling up the side, explosion stuff. It's just so well done.
Yeah, you just, you stare at it for about 10 minutes and you're still finding little stories and things in it. Yeah, they really do go to town. They've done a new table as well, as recently, a Fallen Titan. Yeah, I think it's a Warhound Titan or something. They're basically just, they got a couple of miscasts from Forge World.
Yeah.
Because obviously they can just pop next door and be like,
"Yeah,
you got any spare Titans lying around?" And they go, "Yes, it's a few in that bin over there." And they just built a table out of it. And obviously you wouldn't know to look at it. And it looks amazing. It's just like this ruined war machine just all over the thing, and that's really good. But anyway, before we get too distracted, before we get into GP Birmingham, have you been up to much playing magic at all? Have you
I can't remember if we spoke about it last time. Was it last time we did it, was I saying about I was going to draft with my cousins, I think I said.
Yes.
Yeah. So they they had a really good time. They were straight away after, they were like, "Oh, when is this?" It's like every Friday. oh my God, let's do it every week. I'm like, I probably won't, but you guys can if you want. So they proper enjoyed Dominaria, and because it was the Dominaria release one, and it was you weren't at that one, were you?
No, I missed it. I've been a bit rubbish on the magic events at the moment.
I mean, I am as well, to be fair, but there was just loads of people I hadn't seen for ages. There was about four tables, and Mav was there as well, so that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And it was a ridiculous situation where the whole room had I think it was four or five judges, I think. But unfortunately, two of the... So I had my cousin, one of our friends from school, and then his girlfriend. And unfortunately, on two of the tables they were on, there were no judges, but then the one I was on had three.
No.
So we probably should have custom did it, but whatever. so that was really fun. Dominar Irish is quite fun to draft. You make some really weird decks. Like I made like a, it was technically blue white, but then like almost half of the cards were colorless. It's just really weird stuff like that. And then, you know, they had a good time like playing properly sort of for once rather than just, you know, at home. Which I remember was, you know, a really good experience because I remember doing that for the first time like 4 or 5 years ago. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And then, when was it? Was it the next day or the day after? Yeah, was it Sunday? I had the PPTQ to run for Dice Loon, and that went really well. We only got 16 people, and Simon was one of the people that played, and indeed obviously won it, which was unexpected for lots of different people.
Yes.
But yeah, so played that, and then we also did, almost like GP style, we sort of also fired like some drafting pods as we went, which was a bit challenging, because I was kind of doing, I had to like get results while I was also doing like a time draft with someone.
That's odd.
And normally I'd be like, Simon, can you help? But unfortunately he was in the top eight, so. But no, so that was good. So we got like, three pods, I think it was, of people playing throughout, you know, the hours of when GP was still going on, when the PPTQ rather was still going on. So I haven't really been doing too much magic wise, but I've been in some nice little popular events at Dice Loon.
That's awesome.
What else? But yeah, also, you know, jokes aside, Simon built some, or drafted particularly, some rather ridiculous situations. Like he was combined, like he did like a four colour. The deck he won with, you know, obviously the drafted one was like a four colour nonsense thing.
Oh yeah.
And it was just very, very nice little tricks and stuff. And then one of the sealed pulls someone had, not Simon, they opened a foil Teferi and a is it Jaya with the red planeswalker?
Uh-huh.
And also the legendary sorcery that goes with her.
Wow.
So I don't think Nick really minded not making top eight because it was Teferi and the rest. So yeah, so it was good. It was a real sort of positive atmosphere. It was the first time I'd done a event at Dice Loon since they'd moved, and it was just super good. It was just like nice having a proper event. There's some drafting at the back, some people on the side doing, you know, board games and stuff. The pizza's coming out. It was good. It was a nice little atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I'm looking forward to either playing or judging there again, to be honest, because it's nice.
Yeah, they're going from strength to strength, I think. Yes. Especially with the new store, just giving them so much more.
Yeah, it's crazy big.
It is good. Forget how it winds about around the back as well sometimes. You kind of go in
there. I know.
You're like, oh, I can hear people doing, oh, okay. It just goes on.
One of the rooms is shut at the moment, isn't it? Because it's full of loads of junk they have to get rid of. So, yeah. Like, it's only like two-thirds. Or three quarters at least, like done at the moment.
What was it they put in there? They said they were going to do something with it. I can't remember.
Was it like for custom like D&D sessions or like sort of like role play stuff? Like you'd have sections which had like doors to them, so that you know you could be noisy and stuff and that's whatever. Cool.
That'd be good to see.
Yeah.
Okay then, so. This last weekend just gone, there was a GP in our back garden, and in top form, none of us went. But it seems to be pretty much a bit of a, not a repeat, but thinking about the SCG Open that happened recently and this sort of resurgence of these black-red aggressive vehicle lists. They're all over the top eight again. I think we've got four. No, was it five? So there's one, two, three, four, five.
Yeah, five. Yeah.
Six. No, it's six because the only other two decks. No, that's six. I double counted one. The only other two decks in there was a blue white control and black green constrictor.
Oh yeah, that's it. Yeah, no, you're right.
And I won't talk too much on the black-red vehicles list because realistically the numbers between them are very, very similar, unsurprisingly. Yeah. I think the biggest things it comes down to are the number of magma sprays versus cut to ribbons.
Hey.
And you've also got a couple of people playing Glorybringer as well in the main versus the side. Chain Whirler, Goblin Chain Whirler, seems to be a four of in most of them, if not all of them. Which is, again, in my mind, kind of really solidifying this as a mono red deck that just splashes black for a few key pieces.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Which is how I had when I was tinkering with a version of it. That's how I'd kind of done it. And it's interesting to see that's just kind of how it seems to be shaping out.
The only black is Cut to Ribbons, which technically you don't even need black to play in the first place. And then Scrap Rich Ground, which you also don't need black to play.
Yep.
And then you've just got an unlicensed integration. Yep. Is the only actual black thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, worst case scenario, I mean, I had games, because I was toying with a greedy version before the bannings with Deserts. So I had four of the colourless Deserts. It's basically Ramunap Red, but splashing black. So it was kind of this, but with Desert theme as well.
Why Desert?
Because Ramunap Ruins was so good.
Oh, I see. Okay, before that, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so it's before the bannings. It's a little while ago now. And also, it gave me sideboard access. This is when Teemo was really good, and you needed ways to interact in the mid game. And I would sideboard into the Sand Strangler card, which was really good against Teemo. You have some percentage of games where you need black and you haven't got it, and it's nice that unlicensed disintegration is the only card that you can't cast. For that, I mean, it's unlucky. I always seem to, whenever I got cut off black, I always would draw just like multiple unlicensed integrations. But them's the breaks.
The one that surprised me was Khan. Now, when Khan came out, I was like, oh, it's great, like cheap planeswalker, really high loyalty. And I didn't really think he did very much, particularly like his ultimate. And people were like, oh, this is going to be really good. And I'm like, I don't really see much play. Like, maybe it goes into like a control deck and maybe like it goes into modern because it's like a colourless thing and it does, you know, generic good card draw stuff. But I think what I hadn't factored into my head was, I was like, oh, okay, card draw, that goes into like a control deck. But what I hadn't factored into account was the fact that it's colourless, so it can go to anything.
Yeah.
And therefore, it goes really well in like an aggro deck where you're not drawing cards for an advantage, you're drawing cards just to keep going. So that's actually surprised me that he is being played in standard because of that.
Well, just imagine a fairly common sequence with a deck like the Red Black as well. Turn one Bomak Courier, turn two Heart of Kieran, turn three Scrap Heap Scrounger, Crew Heart, Swing, turn four Khan, make a dude, which is now a 4/4. And you can either use, because he's on five loyalty, you could then be really greedy and crew with Khan.
Yeah.
And he's still sitting there at two. And also, you've got a 4/4 blocker.
Sorry, the minus making an artifact as well. You can even do that if you just go, oh, I've got a nice integration, but I've got any artifacts. Like, that's super just useful.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the three damage, when you don't get it, it you really feel it.
Yeah.
Because you kind of, even though you play it and think, okay, that three damage is just gravy, obviously, a deck like this is wanting to do the damage and get that little bit of extra points of damage through if it can. So if you've got these situations where you really want that three damage to kind of be hitting through because you want to push some sort of tempo advantage just to kill your opponent. So if you don't get it, then it's really rough. So another way of getting that is, you're absolutely right, I think it's really good, which is why I think we're seeing the lean towards the Balissa and PNLR as well. So you've got all these little ways of getting the artifacts in there, which is good. I mean, it makes sense.
It's kind of, I always like this deck, just sort of red black in combination, just because it's like the nicest integration is just really good. But look at these top eight decks, I definitely would want to play the red black deck. But again, as someone that's sort of, you know, I sold my heart of Karans, I don't want to buy Khans, that kind of thing. I want to play it, but it's just way too expensive kind of thing. And it's not like, say, you know, however many months ago where you had a bit more of a variant top eight. Obviously, it probably will get a bit more varied as stuff goes along. But I'm kind of looking for some kind of cheap, like, okay deck that's just a bit fun to play with. I think if I want to do that, I'm going to either end up not playing standard for a bit or go back to Godfrey's Gift, which wasn't too bad, I don't think. But then still, I need to get four of those red mythic guys, Combat Celebrant, or whatever it's called.
Sorry, say that again. You went a bit funny.
If I wanted to do Godfrey's Gift again, the lists that seem to be good seem to run four copies of that Combat Celebrant.
Oh, Combat Celebrant, yes.
Which I think is, since Godfrey's Gift did actually see some play, I think he's probably going to go up a bit. So yeah. It's not like I can just play what I'm already playing. I don't think I could easily replace him as much. So, I don't know, again, that looks a little bit expensive either way, unfortunately.
It's frustrating because the red Grift deck we saw last week looked really good and really fun. But for exactly what you just said, it's a bit like you're having to get the four celebrants. The rest you could really piece together quite cheaply, but that guy kind of,
like, I don't know, I don't really know what to do with this format, because it seems like unless you're, because again, our license integration is just super good. You just seem to need to have either Teferi to play control or Khan and Heart of Karan to do something else, if you know what I mean. Well, and I just want something that isn't as expensive but still can take these on.
Well, green black.
It's true.
Vraska is a one of. It's an expensive mythic, but the rest of it isn't terrible. There's a lot of commons and uncommons here. You've got Thrashing Brontodon.
Why doesn't it run what's her face? The double explore one.
Pass.
I swear all of the constriction decks we used to run her. Because that's why I didn't want to get into it, because I didn't have any of those. I had everything else. Oh, that's not too bad. I might be able to play this now.
I think that card's good. However, I think Ravenous Chupacabra is probably better.
Really? Even though it can go mental?
Well,
is it Jade Light Ranger, is it?
Yeah, Jade Light Ranger. So you need... See, my issue with when I saw the Explore stuff with... Winding Constrictor is... So, Winding Constrictor is like the force multiplier of this deck.
Sure.
Now, that needs to have not died. So you need to have A, drawn that card, and B, it needs to have not eaten a Fatal Push or any other kind of removal spell for you then to kind of really kind of get value out of it. So, then adding another variable in the Explore might just whiff, and you might end up with an irrelevant creature. Yes, you've drawn two lands, but at the point you're impacting the board, you play, what is it, 2/2?
Yeah.
So you've got your Winding Constrictor, it hasn't died, you play your guy, and then it doesn't get the counters that you want. You'd just be a bit sad.
Yeah, I get you, yeah.
Whereas Chupacabra, you play it, it kills something.
Have you seen I think I can't remember if I mentioned this before on another podcast, have you seen the official card ruling on Oracle around Jade Light Ranger?
No, what's the...
So you've got all the normal stuff like if no card is revealed, most likely because the player's library is empty, doesn't get one counter, all the kind of stuff that goes with Explore. But it's unique ruling at the top, which I can't believe is not like for an unstable card, is if you reveal a non-land card for the first time Jade Light Ranger explores and leave it on top of your library, you will obviously reveal the same card the second time it explores. If you don't pretend to be surprised, you will hurt Jade Light Ranger's feelings. Like, feel free to go on whatever other Oracle or whatever app you're using on your phone. That is the first ruling. It literally says that. It's amazing.
Oh, wow.
If you don't pretend to be surprised, you will hurt Jade Light Ranger's feelings.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, you could totally play this deck. I'm looking at it. I mean, the Vrask Contempt is only playing a couple of those.
I've got to. Yeah, this thing, I want to go off what I have, and I do have these cards, so this is actually doable.
Adventurous Impulse?
The only other thing that I was planning on playing was, what was it? I had that black-white Vampire Tribal deck, which is fine, because it can go big and wide quite quickly because of all the enchantments and lords and stuff that make them big.
Yeah.
But I feel like, not obviously it's not as good as you'd expect because you are like to have something, an anthem in play, but I feel like the Chain Whirlers are just going to screw me over, so I feel like I think I might not have to, you know, I might not want to play that deck anymore. Because if they're everywhere, that seems hate on tokens a lot.
Yeah, Chain Whirler, because I'm looking at Glint's Leaf Siphoner in this deck as well, and you kind of feel like if they go first, he's a bit of a liability. He just does nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, he's 5 now. Yeah. I don't know if I've got any of those. Are they still pricey?
I think they're probably fairly, you know, average. It might be about £4 or £5, something like that. Maybe less. I don't think he's going to be earth shattering.
They are. Wow. Okay. They are 150.
No way. Yeah. Snap them up. I mean, what's that?
Cool. Okay. That's what I'm playing now. Apparently, green black is Twitter.
Yeah.
Sweet. Get my dice out. Also, I like that this has Thrash and Bronzedorf, because Thrash and Bronzedorf, when it came out, I was like, this is amazing.
Yep.
This is just value all over the place. Yep. If you're playing green, just main deck as many of these as you can, because they're great. And I think it wasn't until the GP before this or GP before that, you even saw any of them in people's sideboards, and I'm glad that this is main deck, because I'm just like, it's always good, particularly in a format where artifacts are now super common.
Yeah. I mean, I think, without sounding too arrogant, you know you've been playing Magic for a significant amount of time when you see a card like that and you just immediately know it's good. And you don't even really need to have anyone explain why. You just think that is an awesome card. I mean, it's aggressively costed as well for its stats.
Yeah, exactly. For a start. That's what I like about
it. Yeah. No, I'm quite glad he's getting his moment in the sun. And you've got to expect it. I mean, if you're seeing this many red-black vehicle decks, then people are going to have that sort of pre-board tech, because why wouldn't you? And also, you get... The great thing about him is it's not even a case of, I'm just going to react to red-black vehicles. You just go, okay, this is the way the format's going. I'll stick 4 of them in, because not only is it good against red-black vehicles, but if we just have a little look at the blue-white control deck.
In the top 8.
Yeah, playing 8 main deck enchantment spells.
Yeah.
And 6 of those are the removal spells. So you're basically telling them they've got to use those removal spells on him, or he's going to kill whatever you've killed. They're playing plenty of other removal in the form of, like, Disallow, Essence Scatter, why am I saying Settle the Wreckage. For a second there, I thought they weren't playing Settle the Wreckage, and I was a bit confused. Yeah, and all the Wrath effects.
Nice.
So, yeah, you get a bit of a bonus against decks like that. And also, this guy's not playing it in the main, but History of Benalia, which you can't tell me that's not going to continue to see play. And also Godfarer's Gift as well. So it hits quite a significant amount of stuff that I think is fine. And even in the mirror match, if you're playing like this green-black deck and you're going, right, okay, I've got my Bronzedons. In the mirrors, you've got ways to kill Ballista and Gearhulks. So
it seems
pretty good.
It's with decks like these, I'm glad that you flagged this one up, because, again, if I can't play something silly, I like at least playing something that is, like, well known, but main decks, like you said, stuff that is the whole field, because you get those really, like, cocky players going, oh yeah, you're playing that, it's not fair because you main deck all these, like, if you didn't main deck that, like, I would have won. It's like, yeah, but you're playing the deck that everyone's playing, so of course I'm going to main deck. And I kind of like putting those people on tilt, because, oh, you're playing the card that's really good against my deck. Like, yes, of course I am. So I think I might play this deck and enjoy the salt that will come off of everyone playing red black.
It is delicious. I saw a pro, I can't remember which pro player said it now, but they said it was really anecdotal and quite frustrating to read, but it fits this. And it says, the way you win at Magic is to basically try and beat the thing that everyone's doing. Something. Yeah. I mean, that wasn't verbatim, but that's pretty much it.
That's what I like about Magic. Like, again, the reason why I haven't played Standard recently is because there's no crazy thing I want to play. Like, I talk about, you know, my favourite times of playing Standard, it was like, you know, Villainous Wealth or Corfero's Gift, I actually quite enjoyed recently as well. It's always the crazy stuff that people... Oh, no, actually, what was the other one? It was that... Is it like that Emerge deck or something? And then I did like something crazy with the Tanweir Garrison and all that nonsense. It was just something that I'd made entirely myself. It was just so... People just didn't know what was going on. And that gives you just such an edge over everything, because everyone's like, I don't know how to do this, because all of my skill at this game is to do with being used to what people play.
Okay, then. So before you lock yourself in to green-black vehicles... Okay. Green black vehicle, sorry. Green black constrictor. Have a little look at the top 32 decks. So,
I like the steel leaf stompy.
I mean, it starts like really well, and the more we scroll, the better it will get. But yeah, let's start with steel leaf stompy because that's really cool. So it's got four blossoming defense, a collection of green black and utility lands.
How is this also not right? Run Jade Light Ranger. This is insane.
Well, it's got
no one likes it.
Greenbelt Rampager.
Elephant.
Yep. So the Greenbelt Rampager, Merfolk Branch Walker, Ronus the Indomitable, Scrap Heap Scrounger, Steel Leaf Champion, which is the 3 green, 5/4, can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less.
Good.
Which is really good. And then the Brontodon as well. So in many ways, playing bigger than a lot of what you're going to see from red-black. So, you know, playing a Bomac Courier and then playing a Branch Walker, which is likely to be bigger.
Well, it runs Galta, which is bigger than anything in the entire format.
And I'm just trying to think, right? So if you've gone Greenbelt Rampage, a Heart of Kirim, turn two, crew at attack. Turn three, can we play Gilter? Is that too stupid? So that's six. So that would be 7 power. So that would make him... Oh, no, so it still costs 6 mana. So you'd need... Okay, so then if in turn three you play Ronus, you could get Gilter... You could get Gilter Primal Hunger out turn four?
Yes. Wait, you're saying Greenbelt Rampage turn one?
Oh, no, he needs to come into play. He needs to... Yeah. Darn, I knew there was something wrong with this. Yeah, maybe not turn four. Could you do turn four? Llanowar Elves. Okay, Llanowar Elves. And then... No, I don't think it works.
No.
Damn.
Okay. No, it's good. I like that this is currently a format where you can turn two, play a 5/4 with some other nonsense on it as well. It's just stupid.
Oh, maybe that's how you do it.
Llanowar Elves turn two, Steel League Champion. Like, it's you showed them to someone 10 years ago, it's like, how is what?
Yeah, their brain would have exploded.
Yeah,
no, that's good. So, yeah, if you did that, turn two, turn... Yep, so then you've got 6 power on board. So then you need 6 mana steel. So then turn three, you could play another Steel Leaf Champion. Then you could do it turn four.
Sweet. Although, if I want to play this, I definitely need to get rid of the Heart of Karan. So I need to find a good Heart of Karan replacement, which I don't think Heart of Karan's super good in this. It's just that it's efficient. It's mostly, I think, you have to have Heart of Karan if you run Planeswalkers, but because it's an unplaneswalker, I think you're fine just using a replacement, I think.
You could certainly get away with it. I mean, it would be the end of the world. The evasion's really good. But, I mean, you're not short of two drops in these colours, let's be honest. Well, I say these colours, I mean this colour.
Alright, let's have a look at the rest.
Cool. So you've got one of red aggro, which is fairly stock. But black-white vehicles, I thought, was interesting. 14th cool. place.
But 4 History of Benelius and 2 Lyras. Plus 4 Heart of Karan. This is so expensive. I want 4 Khans as well. Jesus Christ. Oh, it's just money, this deck.
It looks cool, though.
It does look good. These are sort of like the other ones. I would play these, but I will not chuck 200 quid at standards right now.
No, that's fair enough. I'm just interested to see a vehicles deck without red. That's quite cool.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I
like that the red deck, on the side now, I do like the red decks have Inventor's Apprentice. I've missed that guy. He hasn't been in it for like 2 years.
Yeah, he's decent. He is decent.
I don't think he was last seen until like when Saheeli Ray was still a thing. I think that was the last time I saw him in standards.
I can't think. What was the other one I saw as well down here? Black red. Oh, I think that was. Oh, yeah.
Adventurous Impulse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I like it, but apparently it's seeing play in all the green stuff. Like,
is it the Traverse the Evenwald kind of thing?
It's to me, it's if you ever played Hearthstone, it's just that tracking card that hunters have that no one ever plays. It's just it's just like pay one, look at another card, get a card. Like, I don't think that's very good, but apparently I'm wrong, I guess.
I think people maybe just really miss
Tune with Aether.
Tune with Aether a bit.
Maybe. But I mean, that would work great because, you know, the elephant, but oh well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's okay, that card. But yeah, I mean, what I think the biggest issue with that is you're going to keep opening hands. Like, you could keep an opening hand based on the number of Attune with Aethers you had.
Yeah,
because Attune with Aether was a tapped land. And yeah,
it's true.
If you've got one forest and that,
yeah,
you can't be as confident with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you a little bit. I'm not sold on it. Because Traverse as well was just so much more reliable and also had the tutor effect.
Yeah, I like Traverse. I miss that card, it's good. Okay.
19th place has got Jade Light Ranger, just to make you happy.
Oh yeah, true, yeah. 22nd place, Grixis Chain Whirler. Like, even to say those words just sounds so aggressive. And then you look through it, it's got like literally Simon of Glorybringer, Chain Whirler, Scarab God, Torrential Gate. Like, just all of this is just so obnoxiously like, oh god, that god, oh god, that, oh no, this is so bad. Like, all of this is just very much like Value Town in terms of all the cards that just very well known aggressive stuff.
So it's got this proper land base of like what you'd see in a Grixis control deck. So like all the dual lands to make the Grixis colors, and yeah, it's almost like, well, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of the Grixis decks that were floating around, kind of like that weren't quite Teemer. Because you remember when Teemer started playing like World of Virtuoso.
Yes.
Not Teemer, sorry, Grixis decks with World of Virtuoso and other bits. But everyone was kind of thinking, well, it doesn't have Attune with Aether and all of the energy things, so it's not as good.
Yeah.
This almost seems like, well, now that you can't do that as reliably, this is a pretty good. It's playing all the efficient removal. So two Abrades, Harness Lightnings, Magma Sprays, four of Rassler's Contempt. And just really like efficient creatures as well. Like Glintsieve Siphoner is card advantage, Glorybringer is card advantage, Chain Whirler is card advantage, the Scarab God, Torrential Gearhulk, World of Virtuoso. Like, everything in this deck can give you a 2-for-1, like, all creature wise. In some capacity.
It's got another white black vehicles deck, which is interesting. I've skipped ahead to white blue gift in 29th place. Like,
okay.
this guy seems to have been just asleep for 6 months and just not really cared. He's just kind of woken up and go, well, I've got a Godfrey's gift deck, I'm really good at it, let's just rock up to the tournament, and he's done quite well. Like, there's no additions whatsoever, I don't think. No, there's nothing from the set. This is great. I like it. It's just gone like, no, this is fine. I'm not going to change. I've seen people add red. I've got nothing to do with that. Stay away.
Still works.
Yeah, it seems fine. Like, again, there's literally nothing. Great.
This is what I find amusing about Magic sometimes is a deck. I think this deck, like this blue-white gift deck, it's a perfect example of that deck didn't just suddenly stop being able to win a game. Like, the deck's fine. It's just that you look at the rest of this top 32, like every other list is red black vehicles. There's quite a lot in this top 32. Yeah. Probably at least half, if not more. I'm not going to count them. But yeah, it's funny, isn't it? How, like, you look at, I think naturally you kind of look to the new things to do and thought, actually, yeah, like this blue white deck's still there. If you've got it, there's still no harm in playing it. This guy did all right with it.
I'm not sure about 32nd place. I've seen this about a little bit, Grixis Energy. I'm not really sure if you can call yourself Grixis Energy if you've only got, like, two ways of making... I know, you've got Harness Lightning. So, like, three ways of making energy, minus either hubs, I guess. Like, again, like you said, you kind of need another card, like Attune of Aether, that's going to give you energy straight away.
Yeah.
Other than that. And if you lose the cards that you've just played, then you've got no real energy making... I don't know.
It's a weird... I find these decks really weird because... first of all, this is very similar to the Grixis Chain Whirler. Except it's gone for a couple more control-y cards, like Supreme Will and Syncopates. I think the triple red is very, very greedy in the other deck, especially when you're playing the double black Vraska's Contempt, double blue Torrential Gearhulk. That could go wrong. But anyway, this Grixis Energy deck, 32nd, I think I personally think there's a lot of conflicting cards here.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll
give you an example. Like, so if you're playing against a normal energy deck, let's say Teemer Energy, like, it didn't really matter what stage in the game they were, they always had like more energy than the card that you've just played gives you. Yeah. So like Harness Lightning, you know, Harness Lightning for five or six was just like something you had to almost take into consideration. Well, for me, I look at this word, Whirler Virtuoso, or Harness Lightning, and I kind of read it as like, comes into play, makes a Thopter. Like, it's not like you can keep on making Thopters. Where with Teemer, when they played the Virtuoso, you're like, oh, I have to kill that now before they get more energy.
Yep.
Like, this deck has no way of making energy reliably unless you have a Glintsleeve Siphoner. So for me, I don't think these energy cards are a continual threat. It's more just you will get one of the things it tells you to, and maybe if you're lucky, you'll get slightly more. I don't think that's good enough.
No, that is a very, very good point. Especially when you consider the Grixis Chainwhirler deck is playing a copy of Glimmer of Genius.
Yeah.
But the Grixis Energy deck is playing no Where's copies. That? It's like, Where's what? That? Why?
That's not good enough, really, is it?
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's not an energy deck, really.
It's just enters play, you make at least one Thopter, maybe more. Yeah. Probably not.
I think the reality is the good energy decks use cards that have been banned. and there's a reason why they were banned, and that's that, really. I don't think really you've got enough pieces to make a reliably powerful.
No.
Because you can do the three artifacts that work off each other, you can do that whole thing, and you can do something.
The mana guy, woman.
Yeah,
she's good.
She is good. But I mean, we're not even seeing anything that even resembles Teemer in these upper bits. So hey ho. But yeah, I mean that was the top eight and the top 32. It's pretty good. But the other thing we wanted to chat about was going about building a cube, because I know, Grant, you mentioned quite a bit about cubes, and it got me to thinking. It's one thing I've always kind of in the back of my mind would be nice to have my own cube, but I think it's a bit of a minefield, like where to start. And I'm sure I could Google how to make a cube, and I could get a document that says, oh, you need X amount of this, X amount of that, whatever. But we're just kind of wondering, what would be, if someone was saying to you, Grant, I want to build a cube, how do I, and I don't mean one that you go on a list, you go on a website like the Star Wars one or the Pokemon.
Yeah, sure.
Someone's done all that. I mean, they want to build a cube using cards that are real. How do you go about that whole process?
Well, as you mentioned, like, I'll leave out the custom ones, because I've got Star Wars, like you said, I've got the Pokemon one, as I mentioned before. And there's another one, which I can't remember if I mentioned last time, which I've only recently just printed out, which I need to cut out, which is called Netropolis, but it's like a cyberpunk-themed one, which is really, really interesting. But again, this is all custom, so it doesn't really matter. But generally speaking, for the cubes I have built, it's been based around a set. So I've done a conspiracy one, I've done a finishing off a conspiracy take the crown, or whatever it's called, one. And then I'm... halfway through doing an unstable one.
Okay.
Now there was a good I think it was a Channel Fireball one, actually. It might have been an Energy Golfing one though, or both. But it was about building an unstable cube, because obviously you could do uncubes before, but they didn't really have enough sort of going through them for it to be well, like, enjoyable. Like, again, those cards are kind of silly, but you need to have some kind of playability factor running through it for it to just not be mindless, just nonsense.
That makes sense. Oh, very quickly as well, Grant, just in case anyone who might not be aware what a cube is, how would you very quickly define it? Okay, so I forgot, I assumed that people would know that. I should have said that first.
Yeah, so I believe the term, I did look up this about 2 or 3 years ago, because someone mentioned cube. I was like, why is it called cube? I believe it's called cube because the minimum you need is 360 cards, because that is, if I've done my maths correctly, that is... what is it? It's 8 times 3 times 15, I think. Whatever it is to have the bare minimum number of cards to draft 8 people, basically. Yeah. That number equals 360. So for you to build a cube that will be playable by up to 8 people, you have to have at least 360 cards.
Yep.
which I believe something to do with cubes. That's why it's called cubes.
No, that's cool.
There is probably more to that.
And this is for drafting as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So you need to first thing you need to do is make sure that whatever you're trying to build will have at least 360 cards in. So if you're just going like, oh, I'll do one of each card from a certain set, that's not really going to work. And most of the cubes I have seen, people will go above that number, not really so they can go up to more people, although potentially, of course, that could be a thing. You go, okay, let's build a cube for 16 people. You know, that's not really going to be, you're not really going to get 60 people to play very often. But I think the reason they do it is because, of course, if you think about how a normal booster pack works, say if you open, again, like a box of boosters, you're going to get probably over maybe 10 or something of each, of some commons, aren't you? Just because commons are, by definition, common. And, you know, you could open a box of Kaladesh or, was it Aether Revolt? Whatever Fatal Push is from. And you probably won't get, like, even three, let alone a playset of them.
Yeah.
Just because, again, although they are uncommon, so, you know, they're ultimately mostly worth less than rares, you can't really rely on getting those. So by having a cube that's over 360 cards, you can kind of, what's the word, kind of like emulate that a bit better.
Yep.
So rather than, say, having what I've done for a few of mine, rather than, say, doing like three of every common, two of every uncommon, one of every rare, that's cool because you've got a small number of cards and that's fine. And it works very well for like a custom set where no one's really used to getting a certain number of each card. But really what you want to be doing, I think the was the optimum number, I think it was 6-3-1-1, I think was the ultimate ones.
Right.
So I think one of them did like 8-3-1-1. So what I mean is 6 or 8 copies of a common, then 3 of every uncommon, 1 of every rare, and 1 of every mythic. Yeah. And you know, if you do that kind of calculation for any set, so imagine like a set's got 250 cards in it on average. If you work out how many commons it's got, uncommons, and times it by those numbers, you come out with normally about 600 or 700. So if you want to make a cube that is going to be, say if you wanted to do Ixalan as a cube, you know, you've got to bear in mind that if you want to make it representative, that cube is going to be 700 or 800 cards.
Yeah.
And although it's quite cool, these custom sets I've done where I've just printed them off at work, haven't had to pay money for them, you do end up paying about 30 quid in just sleeves or boxes. So it's cool when you go like, oh, this is fine, it's just loads of commons and uncommons, and they're not going to cost very much money, but you've got to think about where you're going to store it,
yep.
Sleeves. You've got to also remember to sleeve up like about 200 at least basic lands, because of course you can't just run basic lands in whatever sleeves you want, because you're going to have to use the same sleeves as the one you built your cube in. So there's a few kind of, I don't know, just admin stuff, but those are the sort of main housekeeping type stuff.
Yeah, but that's good to think about, because I think it's an easy thing to forget, the whole storage thing, because Sonny brought his cube along to a GP once and it's just massive box, and I was like, Jesus, he's lugging that around. And I was like, this was like foiled out expeditions.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like, I wouldn't want that to leave the house.
No, exactly.
But yeah, you've got to find somewhere to put it. I think the basic lands is a good one. That's an easy one to forget. Because I've been before where you go, even just like doing a draft where it isn't a cube, and you go around people's houses or whatever, and they're like, so where's the lands? And then you and then you see that moment where the host, it suddenly dawns on them. Oh, I don't have any basic lands apart from the handful in my other decks.
Let's unsleeve these expedition things to use the same sleeves to play them. Yeah, it's just not good, is it?
No. So yeah, that's a good one. And okay, so bearing all that in mind, then, so let's say you didn't want to go with it, because I think that's a really good formula for emulating a set, creating an Ixalan or an Aether Revolt draft experience. And that's quite simple. Once you've got those numbers down, like 8-3-1-1 or 6-3-1-1, however you want to do it, that's quite good. Then you just put in the work in to attain the cards. But what about building your own cube if you wanted to not go along the theme of a set, but you wanted to have, because you see where people, like in Sunny's one, for example, he wanted to use all the expeditions, have some real good power level in there. Basically, have the showcase of this draft experience where you're getting to draft and play with really powerful cards.
Yeah, so as you said, like the ones I've done have either been custom sets or real sets, and the reason I've done that, and like I said, I've done, you know, what, a 3-2-1 kind of idea with conspiracy, and I'm going to do the same for Unstable. And that's fine for me, because although it's kind of like a lazy, let's just get a set, the thing is with conspiracy, particularly Unstable, of course, is you can mix them together quite easily.
Yeah.
So I've kind of just got not so much a cube, more just like a selection of cards I can rely on to do what I like with. In terms of doing like an actual custom cube, again, like you said, the ones I think you come across most are just people not showing off, but generally like it's just really powerful cards, or, you know, I'll collect all of these foils or all of these promos or whatever. And I think that's fine. And I remember, I think I have played, not too often actually, but out of custom cubes that I have played, it's been fun, because you get your first boost back and you go, oh cool, like, you know, there's two swords in here, the Jason Mind Sculptor, all that. And it's, I don't think it's great, because although it's fun seeing all these crazy cards in your hand, to me that doesn't really feel like drafting, because although it gives you a really tough decision, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right to me, if that makes sense.
No, I can appreciate that. I've done a couple of cubes online, and I did a few that my friends have done, and I totally get what you're saying. It's very different. It's not...
No.
What I find actually can be quite difficult, and this isn't to put people off playing a cube, is you inadvertently get people that regularly do it, or the person who owns the cube, they get the cube.
Yeah.
They know that if they see card X, okay, I'm going to take that because card Y is coming around, and that's a broken combo.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, a really obvious answer, thing would be like the infinite combo with that. What's it called? I can't even remember the card names now. In World Wake, Splinter Twin. So if you see Splinter Twin,
oh sure,
yeah, then you pick it, because then when Pestermite comes around, you're going to get hooked up. That sort of thing.
I think there's a few things you take into account here. I think like. Certainly what I'm doing for my custom cubes is I make sure that everyone knows what's in the set, or of course for the cube, what's in the cube. And I think it's a real dick move if you go like, I've got this Splinter Twin, is Pestermite or is whatever in the set, and the host's like, oh, I don't know, maybe, kind of thing. Like, I think you need to have a list of what's in it so that people know what they need to look out for.
Yeah.
And another thing I was going to say, and I think the best analogy I can think of, which may be really useful for some people but will go over the heads of loads of others, is to me it's a bit like running a D&D Dungeons and Dragons encounter. Like, you've built a cube, so you're the dungeon master, you put the cube, and you've got all these different cards you can play with. Now what you don't want to do is, say if you build, I'm trying to think of if I did do a custom cube, what I would do, and I really like tribal stuff. Yeah. So let's say I did a set which was kind of like a mixture of like mostly Lorwyn and, you know, Eventide and stuff, but then also like more recent Merfolk and Goblins and stuff, and do that.
Yeah.
What I wouldn't want to do is have, say, a tribe for each colour, and then basically if you don't want to do a tribal thing, you're just going to lose all the time.
Yeah.
You don't want to railroad people into doing what you think they should do.
Yeah.
So again, like a D&D encounter, you want to give people choice, but also you need to have it, you need to be structured at the same time as well. So again, like if anyone's drafted any of the like Eternal Masters or Vintage Masters sets, like there are archetypes that emerge, and I think that's inevitable. But you definitely don't want to build a cube where there's only, like, say, three or four or even five decks. I think you need to make sure that whatever you're designing will be flexible and customizable enough, and that you are transparent about it at the beginning so the players can try and build their own archetype before they get started, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Because I can totally imagine how, if you go, right, I'm going to go tribal, and you go, right, okay, we've got elves, goblins, all the rest of it. But actually, you've put enough creatures in there that if you just want to put, so elves and goblins in red and green, you just build a red green stompy deck that isn't necessarily just elves or goblins, or you could have like blue white blinky kind of effects that like spirits or whatever, so you've got different avenues. But also, it could even be like ways of enhancing the tribal decks as well themselves. Like, it actually just adds more to, right, I'm going to put all the best elves in a cube, and that's what that's going to be. I've seen actually people that go to really, really big extremes with it, where they'll do like a zombie cube, where it's not just tribal, it's like every creature type's a zombie. So in some ways it will always be zombie tribal, but like it's just zombie.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's obviously like the theme of the cube, which is quite fun.
I think, to me, again, I haven't really thought about it in much depth because, again, I tend to go off, like I said, like custom sets or sets that I want to be flexible with. And the thing is, I've kind of almost seen it from the other side in terms of if you look at the custom sets that people build, like, again, I've looked at and built three, and I can definitely tell you that the Star Wars one is the better one. You can see what is necessary to make your own set. And you need to have like a certain amount of removal, you need to have a certain amount of multicolor cards, you need to have a certain amount of, you know, fun cards, but they're not too many and that kind of thing. And I think it's almost like, if you think about how you draft normally, you know, the whole, is it bread thing, the whole bombs, removal, evasion, yep, advantage and dudes or whatever it is. You almost need to do that from like a reverse engineering kind of point of view, in that you go, okay, what does this whole cube need? Like, say if you go, okay, it's going to be mostly these colours, but you've only got removal in black or you've only got removal in red, that's not really good enough. So I think you need to look at the cube as a whole. Yep. And whatever the theme is, make sure that it's at least got these sort of basic, like amenities, I suppose, or utilities, if that sort of makes sense.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Making sure that each colour is viable would definitely require that kind of thought. Again, I'm using another extreme example that I, again, sort of heard about anecdotally, was this one person had this real thing for doing like mono color cubes. Sure. And the mono green one was just weird because there's very little. This was at a time before we started to see a lot of the fight cards coming in. So you couldn't kill anything. And he said, right, there's this one card that exists, which is like one green does one damage to something or shoot Hornet Sting or something.
Hornet Sting, yeah.
And he said, like, that was a first pickable card. Because there's no removal in that cube. As much fun as it might be at face value to be like, oh, I wouldn't mind drafting that for a laugh. Actually, when you start to build a deck and then you realise these little things, it can be a problem.
I think, you definitely, whatever you're planning, you definitely need to make sure that you've got like the basics of what any set would have, you know, this removal or whatever. But I think you really want to think about it broadly, because again, if you go like, oh, I want this color or this creature type, I think that's kind of, it's not going to end well, because just almost by, you know, narrowing yourself that much, it's just not going to ever get to the standards of a cube that is a bit wider, just because you're limiting yourself so much. But I think you need to think like broadly, like, again, I said, like tribal, but across, you know, say 10 years or whatever. If you want to do powerful cards, that's good. But again, you don't just go, because if you were to list off all the most expensive and powerful cards, they are going to be of similar colours or similar types. Like, you're not going to get many like really expensive single target removal spells, are you?
No.
If you get what I mean. So I think it's fine if you want to do a really powerful cube, but you need to make sure that it's not all of that, that it does have everything else as well. So it doesn't really matter what your theme is. That's fine. If you want to go like a, I don't know, like a nature theme, or like you could do like an art theme if you wanted to. That's cool. Or like mostly, say, you know, female artists for magic kind of thing, that'd be quite cool as a cube. But you need to make sure that it's not just all that, because then you go, oh, you know, Therese Nielsen never, I don't know, painted any removal, unfortunately we're gonna have to stick to it. Like, again, you need to think about the sort of viability of the cube overall, rather than just what you just very much sort of obsessively want to stick to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's the key thing about magic as well, is your idea of fun is not the same as exactly the other seven people's idea of fun.
This is why I like the custom cubes, because the thing is, although I do like specific cards and certain types, I very much know that I'm in the minority there. What I'm looking forward to most when I play this Star Wars cube or Pokemon cube or this new one as well, is I want to see what people do with it, because I'm sure that I'm not going to come out top, even though I'm the one that's looked at the cards and cut them out. Someone's going to get more creative than me, and I'm looking forward to seeing that creativity that someone comes up with. Yeah. So I think you definitely need a cube where people can be creative, otherwise they're going to get bored.
Absolutely, yeah, because you want people to be at the end of it saying, oh, I can't wait to be playing that cube again. Or let's break it down and do it again, rather than,
yeah, exactly, oh, I want to do this color. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what you want to hear.
Yeah. Not, oh, I solved that cube, I feel like, yeah, I've learned everything there is to know about that.
Which, like you said, if you've got like a zombie cube, you're not going to play and go like, yeah, let's do that again, but with different zombies. Like, again, it's not really much to it, is there? Just, let's do different zombies this time.
No. But that's how you can, again, kind of going back to the tribal, you just maybe think of the zombie thing, is it's being as broad as possible to try and get as much creativity in there as well. So like the tribal thing, you can actually create a lot of crossover between creature types. So like you can have, there are zombie elves, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
There aren't many of them, but you've got cards there in that exist that can be, will pull people in to a certain archetype, or it might come around late because people aren't drafting it, but the one zombie person's like, oh my god, I got this zombie elf. Like, that's amazing. That's gonna make this deck even more interesting now. So you've got to think of ways to kind of open up more avenues, definitely, than just like, I'm gonna create this. Unless, I suppose it comes down to your play group as well. Like,
oh yeah, definitely.
A group of people that wanna do the mono green cube, then have at it.
But it's I mean, this is more of a personal thing, but I kind of like as well being, you know, you make sure you've got all the basics, you make sure you put your own spin on it, you make sure you haven't been too sort of rigid about it. But then I kind of like adding a few little bits in as well. You get to the end of the cube, I've got like a space for maybe 10 cards, or maybe I'll just go over what I said just to add in a few cards. And I saw this in particular with, I think it's the Pokemon cube I've got. There's one card, and it's kind of like a purple symbol, and it's kind of like an optional, if you want to, kind of like a joke kind of card. And what I like doing with sets, particularly cubes I've got, is you can tempt players with doing something really greedy. And right. I really like it when players will go like, no, I want to do this. And sometimes it goes fantastic, and it's really enjoyable. Or sometimes they'll mess up like a whole pack just to go around this card. So if you are doing, say, I don't know, a set or a theme or whatever, I really like putting in the kind of like a Maze's End kind of card. Not probably that, because that's really specific, but like a win the game card, or you know, some sort of infinite combo, but that requires like three or four cards or something, and be really transparent about it. Go like, oh yeah, if you pick that, you know, you might get this. And I kind of like that sort of chaotic, you know, some player might get there, but most of the time they'll just get really punished for it. And I kind of like just putting in, not too much again, but just like maybe 1% of the cube is just some really tempting thing to build.
Maze's End is a cruel thing to put in a cube.
I don't think I'd ever do that, but it's just as an example, like a win the game.
I think I might have to, if I ever make a cube. I think I will just have to do that now, because someone's going to take it.
I mean, like, I don't know, just like a normal one, like maybe, is it Helix Pinnacle, the pay, put 100 mana into it, win the game, that kind of thing, or Darksteel Reactor, or some win the game card.
Put the Helix Pinnacle in, because then the person who first picks it, they're like, well, if this is in the cube, there's going to be a way to make it.
Exactly.
But don't put that way to make infinite mana in.
but don't be, like I said, like, don't be a dick about it. Do have everything transparent. But maybe sort of go like, oh, if they ask, like, oh, is the mana fixing? They're like, yeah, but then maybe don't tell them how much or something. You know, kind of be honest, but also kind of definitely punish them for being a bit too greedy about stuff.
what you should do is, well, you know, you should definitely do what you're saying, because what you're saying is sensible and the correct thing to do. But what would be really funny is if you built a cube that consisted of as many halves of a combo as you possibly could.
Oh, that's just that. No, it's like the unsatisfying cue.
So you get everyone down to have the opposite of fun, basically. It'd be really.
If they open their pack, they see Umezawa's gin. Like, oh, I open this, and someone's like, oh, I got Umezawa's gin as well. They're like, oh yeah, it was like spoiling this cube. It's like, oh, that's broken. Yeah, but there's no creatures in the set. That would be great.
Oh, could you actually? Could you make a creatureless cube that actually worked?
See, this is what I like. This is a theme I quite like. Now, again, you'd have to really, really like have almost half the cube being just support to be able to let you do that. But I like that idea. Stuff like that I really like. I think, yeah, challenges, as long as you make sure before you start that you can have everything that makes a cube, you know, balanced. And you don't need creatures for it to be balanced, just have the same experience. And I think that would be a really cool cube to build around, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose the obvious thing would be a lot of the cards that make tokens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or artifacts that turn into creatures or whatever. Yeah, yeah. That's cool. I like that idea. Also, I wanted to mention as well, mostly because I'm used to doing custom stuff, but because it's your cube, you can do whatever you want with it. So, like I said, say if you were doing, you know, like I said, like an artistic themed one, like a female artist one. It's your cube. These cards are never going to be in a tournament because they're part of a queue. If you wanted to customize them, so let's say if you didn't have any removal spells, but you got, I don't know, you did it on your computer or something and printed out some proxies, or of course you've got someone to do an edit for you, you can do that. So again, if you're using tokens, you can use custom tokens. If you wanted to use lands, you can do custom lands, like the Star Wars queue I've got. The guy has got these full art lands using artwork from some of the Star Wars, like books and whatever. And again, their lands with little bits of paper in front of them, but it's part of a cube. It doesn't have to be tournament legal. Do what you like with it.
Yeah.
So again, if you wanted to do, say, a whiteboarded one, or again, you liked artwork from a particular person, or you know, particular colours or whatever, you know, you could do that if you wanted to, because again, it doesn't have to be official. And if you want to change cards however you want, you can do that.
Yeah.
Oh, and also just from, again, from like an admin point of view, if you're going to have a cube with stuff that makes tokens, make sure you do have the tokens with you, because that's just annoying otherwise.
Yeah. Sounds obvious, but yeah, definitely. I could probably do this, because I've got tons of tokens in boxes. Like,
yeah.
Mainly angel tokens, I don't know why.
Mine are mostly Saprolings, but then I was mad for Saprolings when I used to play casually and got like loads of custom ones made.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So is there any other nuggets of wisdom you can think of regarding cubes?
I think, again, it's kind of a bit skewed because I mostly prefer custom stuff. I'm just looking at the spreadsheets I've got for like colour combinations and how many copies I've got and stuff. And like I said, if people haven't already, look at the Star Wars The Gathering website, because the cube this guy's built is just amazing. But like he's got, say for instance, like 10 of every white, 10 of every, not number wise, I mean different cards, like 10 of every white, 10 of every blue, whatever, through the colours, and then maybe like 5 multicolored ones, and then for uncommons he's got like the same sort of numbers, but then slightly more multicolored, because it's fine having more multicolored cards if they're not going to be as frequent. And then for rares, like they're mostly multicolored, and again it's to kind of pull people in different directions, and normally it's like a flavour kind of point of view, so you know Boba Fett's going to be kind of junk colours or whatever. But also it's good because it pulls people in different directions. And I think when you are building a cube, you don't have to have a balanced selection of colours, or even have any multicolored stuff in at all. But I think if you are building a cube, you definitely need to make sure that whatever colour combination you go down, it's not going to get too competitive or too, like, just nothing left, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And like the Metropolis set, the last custom one I'm doing, there's maybe like only about 10 multicolour cards. I think that is a bit of a waste. And to be honest, what I might do is design some of my own to put into the cube, because I like multicolour cards. But that's not necessarily meaning it's a bad set. And conversely, like if you are building a cube with lots of multicolour cards in, you need to make sure that your land base is up to scratch for that. So even if it kind of, again, like maybe breaks the theme of the set, you definitely need to make sure that you have enough mana fixing or multicolored lands that fit into that. Like again, say if you were doing you were saying, like let's say the art set, say if you were doing like a particular art theme, I think you still need to make sure that you have non-basic lands in there, even if you couldn't find any of the right artwork, and make sure you change the artwork for it or something, because otherwise it's just not going to be an enjoyable experience, particularly if the cube is like almost everyone's building like tricolor decks or whatever.
Yeah. Which makes total sense.
What else? No, I think that's mostly it, I think. One thing that I've sort of experimented with a few ones is think about how you want to design your booster packs. Because again, if people are building power cubes, like it doesn't matter, it's just 15 cards, that's the end of it. But if you're building custom sets, or if you're building a selection of cards, but it's kind of mimicking a set, if that makes sense, you want to think about, are you going to do like one rare, 3 uncommons, 8 commons, whatever, or are you going to do maybe one rare, one mythic, or are you going to have what I've done for my Star Wars one is the last card's always a non-basic land, because it's really heavy with multicolored stuff. It makes sure that everyone will have access to multicolored lands. Some of them are rare, some of them are common, some of them are uncommon, so it doesn't, you know, it's not like they're super powerful and will encourage people to first pick lands, but it kind of gives it a bit more balance. So you might want to think about how you want to randomise these booster packs, if you're going to do them truly random, if you're going to keep to the rarities, or if you're going to do like I do and literally manipulate those packs so they always have one of a certain card type maybe in them.
Now that makes sense. I like the idea of having the little extra bit of land in there as well, because it gives people a bit of a leg up into being able to play that sweet multicolored rare that they might have got.
You can even do stuff like mimicking like masterpieces and stuff. So if you did a set, you can always just do like a one off, and you can use masterpieces if you have them. But you don't have to. You could just do like a one off of some crazy card that is really good, and maybe not like Umezawa Jit good, but like something really niche that someone might open and go, oh cool, like it's a foil, you know, whatever. And again, that kind of adds a bit more excitement to the pack, a bit like if you were opening it for real. Because again, if people have played this cube lots and it's very predictable, particularly if it's quite a small cube, so it's quite close to that 360 number, everyone kind of knows what's coming. But if it's quite a big cube and you add, like I said, like a really random combo or a really random, you know, foil card, obviously the foil doesn't really matter, but it just makes it more, I don't know, exciting or realistic. I think that makes a cube a bit more, a bit more just realistic, a bit more exciting, I think.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And also with that, you can, particularly if you find yourself playing a cube a lot, there's nothing that says you can't change your cube. You could always just go like, oh, it's the end of the set, I'm going to take out these 20 cards and add new ones in. And you can always change your cube if it doesn't work. You're not stuck to how you designed it. You can change it however you want, really.
Yeah, I think that's probably, if you were getting into doing cube as well, that's probably quite a good thing about them that keeps you interested. The fact that you can then just be like, okay, maybe that didn't work, but that's not a reason to just throw it in the trash. You just go, I'll just change it up.
Because I imagine, like, say if anyone, I mean, I'm sure loads of people have done it, say people have done like an artifact cube or something like along those lines. The moment Kaladesh came out, they would have instantly taken about 20 or 30 cards out to put in some vehicles, because that's just amazing. You know, that's revolutionary for kind of like the whole artifact concept. So I think, again, say if you're like me, where you're trying to not spend as much money on the card game, but you still want to keep, you know, you still want to keep an eye out on new releases because they're quite exciting. I like the idea of, say, someone who hasn't bought a booster pack for years, but has got this really well-balanced cube. But the next time a set comes out, his contribution is just, oh, I like that card, I like that card. I'll spend, you know, £5, put those cards in, and that's his excitement out of that set. Although it's quite limited, you know, it means that you can still keep up to date with a set, but in your own sort of way, which I quite like as a, you know, like a budget way of enjoying the game.
Absolutely. Okay. This is really good, Grant.
Cheers.
Some really good stuff there. I was quite impressed with how much we got out of that one little topic.
Yeah, it's not something I've really talked about, to be honest, because again, like I said, it's mostly custom stuff I've done, but it's, like I said, I've kind of learned a lot from looking at it from the other side, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to be able to talk about it properly, because it's stuff you've mentioned, but then it's kind of like, it's hard when we're doing these things, because you think, I don't always want to go off on that tangent, because then it eats into a lot of the show, but obviously it's a great topic, it's nice to talk about it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, look, I am very aware that my wife will be home very soon, so I don't want us to be caught together.
Fair enough.
So I think we're good to call it there. But no, thanks again for that. That was awesome.
No worries. Thank you for showing me a deck and standard that I actually want to play.
Good.
Cool. Right. I will see you soon.
Take care, buddy.
Take care. Bye. Bye.